Columbus, Bell, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the origin of public schools right after this. Well, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed the scriptural law when they put into our federal constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payments of debts." Now, in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. And in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system. They gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coin. Now, in the intervening 70 years, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School. I conduct that twice a year here at the law school. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. And the best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order that free general law CD package by just calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Now, once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Remember, the Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for your free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about the origin of the public schools. And a neat little book. It's only 130 pages. It's easy reading. And it's fairly short and to the point, written by Zach Montgomery. The thing that was caught my attention was that Montgomery had been appointed by President Cleveland as the undersecretary, or in this case, the assistant attorney general in 1886, I believe it was. And Montgomery was not confirmed by the Senate. Not confirmed. In other words, his nomination was put up there, and the Senate said, "No, we're not going to confirm you. You know, you're a radical. You're some kind of a nut." And the thing that was so radical and nutty about Montgomery was that he was opposed to the public school system. He was opposed to the public education program. Now, of course, today Americans accept public school and public education. There's nearly 50 million American children enrolled in the public school system in America. There's a couple million being educated in homeschool, and about 5 million being educated in parochial schools. So total, we have, you know, pushing 60 million children in the United States, and by far and away, you know, 5/6 of them are going to public school. Public school is the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. It's not provided for in our federal constitution, and indeed most state constitutions in the early days had nothing to do with public school. In other words, when America was codified in our constitution, the federal government had nothing to do with public education, and some states did have provisions for it. They had adopted the public school system from the Babylonian mystery religion. In the Bible, it's prohibited. Education is done by parents. And I'm going to show you that in the early days of America, under our constitutional system of government, education, like feeding and clothing children, was a part of the family's responsibility. In other words, when you have a child, you don't expect the state to feed it. Well, I shouldn't say that. I guess today we do. We have free school lunches, and we expect the state to feed our children, and we expect the state to put us on welfare and food stamps and so on. But I want to point out, as Montgomery did, that public school has encouraged crime, welfare, suicide, and mental illness. That's the thesis of his book. That's the subject matter. That before we had public school, we had less crime. Before we had public school, we had less welfare. Before we had public school, we had less suicide. And before we had public school, we had less mental illness. And that was confirmed in the case Yoder versus Wisconsin in 1970. Confirmed. An Amish fellow took his children out of public school, and this case was sent to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the questions that were raised in the Yoder case was, the state brought it up. The state came in and they said, "Look, if you don't educate children in public school until they're 16 years old, they'll be social misfits and they won't fit into society." Now think of that. And I think most of you would agree with that. You know, if your children aren't educated in public school, like you were, they will become social misfits. They will not know how to lay the neighbor girl in the back of the Chevy van. They won't know how to split lines of Coke, roll a reefer with one hand, and do all those things that normal Americans are able to do today. Now, the Amish people are smart enough to know that when you train a child up in the way he should go, and he's old, he won't depart from it. It's no biblical proverb. And so the Amish are very careful not to allow secular influences like television, movies, and radio, and so on, to influence their children. And if you'll think about it, education is not a system whereby we present two opposites, or we present two theories and then let you decide. Education is a series of indoctrination sessions. You go to school to be indoctrinated. You go to church to be indoctrinated. You're a Catholic today because you were trained as a Catholic from a child. Pope Pius X made an observation. He said, you give me a child until he's 7 years old and he will be a Catholic for life. Well, that's pretty much the case. If you're a Jew, you were trained in Judaism. You did not just wake up one day and say, gosh, I think I'll look into Judaism, and then you study Judaism and say, gosh, this is for me, this is what I want to do. Now, that does happen. Those are called proselytes, but they're rare. They're rare. Most people are raised in their church. They're raised in their country. People are Germans, and they sing the German national anthem, and they're loyal to Germany because they're trained to be Germans in the same way that you were trained to be an American or a Canadian or an Australian, and you're proud of that. That's because you were trained in, you were indoctrinated in that religion, that political ideology. Montgomery knew that, and he brought that to the fore. He said, wait a minute, the people, the politicians, and the people, the elite, the government apparatus is hijacking our republic. I don't know where they're going with it in 1886. Now in 2005, we can pretty well tell. They're hijacking it to the New World Order. They're taking over for an express purpose. They want to change things. And to do that, you change things by educating people. Now, our founding fathers didn't do that. They revolted against King George, but they didn't indoctrinate people. They said, well, that education thing is up to you. You Mormons educate your children, and you Catholics educate yours, and everybody out here does his thing. And one day, somebody woke up and said, let's hijack all the Mormons, Catholics, Protestants, and Jews, and let's turn them against Christianity. Let's turn them against their religious ideologies, and let's make them citizens of a new world order. Let's train them in communism. Americans today practice all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Public school is the 10th plank, and we've accepted that. We've adopted that now. Well, Montgomery points out here in Chapter 9 that the traditional duties of Americans prior, this is prior to 1886, prior to the introduction of this public school system nationally, was this. Every standard writer on the subject of either law or morals proclaims with one voice that parents are bound by the natural law to feed, clothe, and educate their own children. That's a wild concept today. The natural law is the common law. The common law is the law of Moses. It was derived from Exodus 19, verse 16 through Exodus 24, verse 8. That's the old covenant. That's the Mosaic law. And under that law, the natural law, it is the duty of parents to feed, to clothe, and to educate their own children. It's a wild new concept. Today, Hillary Clinton says it takes a village to raise a child. In the old days, it just took a family to raise a child. Mom and dad raised their own children, and they owned them. Today, you parents out there, you don't own your children. The state owns your child. As Montgomery pointed out, this began in the 1880s in California. They said, we're going to replace the parents and parental authority with the teacher and teacher's authority and public school authority, and they did. The principal obligations which parents owe to their children are their maintenance, their protection, and their education. That's from Bouvier's Law Dictionary. Chancellor Kent says, this is from Kent's commentaries now, he says, quote, the duties of parents to their children as being their natural guardians consist in maintaining and educating them during their season of infancy and youth. Sir William Blackstone says, quote, the last duty of parents to their children is that they give them an education suitable to their station in life. A duty pointed out by reason and of far the greatest importance of any, for continues that author. As Pudendorf very well observes, it is not easy to imagine or allow that a parent has conferred any considerable benefit upon his child by bringing him into the world if he afterwards entirely neglects his culture and education and then suffers him to grow up like a mere beast, to lead a life useless to others and shameful to himself. Now, Dr. Wayland, in his Elements of Moral Science, says, quote, the duty of parents is generally to educate or to bring up their children in such a manner as they believe will be most for their future happiness, both temporal and eternal. Again, he, the parent, is bound to inform himself of the peculiar habits and reflect upon the probable future situation of his child and deliberately to consider what sort of education will most conduce to his future happiness and usefulness. Notice again, here's Kent, Blackstone, and Wayland, along with Bouvier. And they all come to the same conclusion, that under our common law, our system of law, the bottom line to this is that the parents have the duty to educate children. Parents, not the state. Now again, the duties of a parent are established by God, and God requires us not to violate them. According to the laws of nature, says Wayland, the teacher is only the agent, the parent is the principal. But under the New England system, as by law established, the parent is not recognized as the principal, nor is the teacher regarded as his agent. The legislature of California has gone so far towards elevating the teacher above the parents, as to make it a penal offense for any parent to even insult the teacher of a public school in the presence of his pupils, no difference what the provocation may be. So in section 654 of the Penal Code of the state, it reads that every parent, guardian, or other person who upbraids, insults, or abuses any teacher of the public schools in the presence or hearing of a pupil thereof is guilty of a misdemeanor. So the answer to that was simply this: if you're going to upbraid the teacher, don't do it in the presence of the other students, don't do it in the classroom, wait until school's over. Now, if the teacher insults the parent in the presence of his children, there's no penalty to pay. Or if the dirtiest loafer in the land insults the teacher of a private school without the least cause or provocation, that's all right. But woe be to the father or mother who has the temerity to breathe one offense word or offensive word against the teacher of a public school, at least in the hearing of his pupils, even should it be to chide him for his immoral conduct towards the child of the offender. Now, in his biennial report for 1864, our state superintendent of public instruction, quoting from the judicial decisions of some of the eastern states construing their public school laws, which are in all respects similar to our own, maintains the proposition that the child should be taught to consider his instructor in many respects superior to the parent in point of authority, and that the vulgar impression that parents have a legal right to dictate to teachers is entirely erroneous. Now, did you get that? Let me go over that one again. In his biennial report for 1864, our state superintendent of public instruction, quoting from the judicial decisions of some of the eastern states construing their public school laws, which are in all respects similar to our own, maintains the proposition that, now get this, the child should be taught to consider his instructor in many respects superior to the parent in point of authority, and that the vulgar impression that parents have a legal right to dictate to teachers is entirely erroneous, and further, that parents have no remedy as against the teacher. Now, where does this concept come from? It comes from the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. It comes from the Babylonian mystery religion. It doesn't come from Christianity. Well, it doesn't come from Christianity in the olden days. It does today, but not in the olden days. It doesn't come from our political process or our constitution. It doesn't come from the Bible. It doesn't come from Moses. It doesn't come from God. It comes from communism. Now, I'm certainly not opposed to communism. I mean, if you people want to practice communism, you certainly have a right to do that. If you want to practice Roman Catholicism, you certainly have a right to do that. Nobody is telling you that you can't practice these vile and evil practices, whatever they might be. And some may be good, some may be bad. Some may be somewhere in between. What I'm opposed to is you enforcing your communist ideology off on me. That's the thing that I'm objecting to. I'm not opposed to other people going to Catholic Church. I just don't want Catholics imposing their religious ideology off on me. I don't want Protestants knocking on my door and telling me that I'm going to go to hell if I don't join their church. I don't need that, and I don't want to hear that. If I wanted to hear that, I'd go to your church and knock on your door and let you tell me that. I didn't need you to come over here and knock on my door and pester me. In fact, the Bible tells you not to go from house to house. I don't know why these people do that, but they do. I guess it's because nobody follows the dictates or the instructions of the Scripture, and particularly when it comes to education. You know, there's four statutes in the Bible. God himself, out at Mount Sinai, said, now here's the way to raise up, here's the way to train up, here's the way to educate children. This is the way I want you to do it. We don't do that. We practice communism in this place. And this guy, Montgomery, pointed that out, and he said, hey, wait a minute. Clear back in 1886, he says, hey, wait a minute, this is wrong, and we need to identify this wrong and correct it. This New England system of public schools is wrong for America, it's wrong for New England, it's wrong for the South, it's wrong for everybody. And he pointed out here, he said, I'm not opposed to education. If you want to know where compulsory education, the concept of compulsory education comes from, it comes from the Bible, it comes from God, it comes from Moses. He thunk it up first. But the concept of educating children in this pagan Babylonian system of education called indoctrination is totally wrong, and he said, I don't want you to do that. Now, of course, God made a mistake there, and we're in the process of fixing that mistake for him. That's the way we've been, you know, for the last several thousand years. God's hit up his wrong end, and so we're going to fix his mistakes. Now, he goes on to the next step over here, and he says, in the state of Vermont in 1874, a school committee expelled from a public school certain children because of their absence from school on a religious holiday. Although they had remained absent in obedience to the commands of their parents, and this too was after the school authorities had been appealed to in vain for leave of absence, this action of the school committee was afterwards sustained by the Supreme Court of Vermont, which based its decision in part at least on the grounds that no divine authority had been quoted or asserted to sustain the right claimed by these parents. And the Supreme Court ruled correctly there. I mean, if you're going to say that, hey, I'm a Jew, and Passover's coming up, and we're jerking our kids out of school to observe Passover, then you need to identify the authority. It'd be Exodus chapter 12, the Mosaic Law. We're going to practice Passover. We have a thing called religious free exercise in this country, so if you're a Catholic and you want to jerk your kid out of school because it's Christmas or it's Easter or whatever it is, you can do that. There's no problem there. But you're going to have to cite some authority. So clear back in 1874, they simply pointed out the same thing. So these parents lost not because of the religious holiday, but because they failed to identify the religious holiday. You can't just walk in there and say, well, we're jerking our kids out of school because we got this religious holiday, but we're not going to tell you what it is or what the basis of this religious ideology is. We're just telling you. That isn't going to fly. Didn't fly then, didn't fly now. So that's kind of beside the point. goes on to say, thus the law of nature, nature's God, which ordains that. It is both the right and duty of parents to educate their children in such manner as they believe will be most for their future happiness. Yeah, that's a wild new concept. Parents deciding how their children should be educated for their future happiness. It's totally disregarded and set at naught by the state, which ordains that it is neither the right nor the duty of parents, but of the state to say when, where, by whom, and in what manner our children shall be educated. And that's Hillary Clinton's philosophy. And she wrote this book here some years back now. It's called It Takes a Village. I'm not sure she wrote it. I think she used her name to it, and some ghostwriter, some communist writer wrote it for her. But the basic principle is that society should educate children. It takes society to raise children. It's the state that raises children. Well, they've been doing that in Germany and Russia and Europe for thousands of years, practicing that kind of pagan philosophy. That didn't come from the Bible. It didn't come from Moses. And again, let me emphasize, I'm not opposed to all you communists and socialists out there that want to educate your children in that manner. You certainly have a right to do that, and I'm not opposed to public school. You know, have at it. And fortunately, here in the United States, I can't speak for you Canadians and Australians and New Zealanders out there. I'm not that familiar with your law, but here in the United States, there's three ways to educate a child. It's public school. That's number one. Most students are in public school. Private school, and that's number two. And there's about 5 million students in private school. And then there's homeschool, of which it's growing rapidly, about 20% a year. And there's some 2 to 3 million students now in home schools here in the United States. So we have three methods to educate children. It's all compulsory. The state requires, God requires that you educate a child. Can't let them grow up like weeds. Can't let them grow up dumb. You got to teach them something. But in homeschool, you can decide what your child learns. That's what the Amish do. That's what Jonas Yoder did. You can follow the Yoder doctrine, Yoder versus Wisconsin, which reaffirms just exactly what this guy Montgomery is telling us. This book, by the way, is called Poison Drops in the Federal Senate. Poison Drops in the Federal Senate. It was copyrighted back in 1886 by Zach Montgomery, but it was reprinted by St. Thomas Press, Post Office Box 35096, Houston, Texas, 77235, first printing 1968, second printing 1983. It was published originally by Gibson Brothers Printers and Bookbinders in 1886, and it was compiled by Zach Montgomery from the United States Census reports and from his own writing. So he documented this from the census reports. These are official U.S. government documents, you know, from 1850, 60, 70, 80, longer. Well documented, and if you want a copy of the book, I would suggest that you go to your local bookstore, and you're looking for Poison Drops in the Federal Senate. It's called The School Question, Parental and Non-Sectarian Standpoint, or From a Parental and Non-Sectarian Standpoint. Reprinted by the St. Thomas Press, Post Office Box 35096, Houston, Texas, 77235. You probably find a copy of it somewhere. Now he goes on over here, he says, now it's always possible for either individuals or states to disregard and to violate nature's laws, violate God's laws, but it is not possible to do so without suffering sooner or later a penalty, and a penalty too corresponding in magnitude with the importance of the law violated. Hence it is, and we assert it without the fear of successful contradiction, that those communities which have so long and so glaringly violated nature's laws in the matter of education are now reaping so heavy and so deadly a harvest of crime, pauperism, insanity, and suicide. Dr. Wayland has well said that the relaxation of parental authority has always been found one of the surest indications of the decline of social order and the unfailing precursor of public turbulence and anarchy. That's what we're entering into here in the United States, public turbulence and anarchy. Now, under the law, as we have already seen, parental authority is not merely relaxed, but it is totally set at defiance. What we would ask, does parental authority amount to in the matter of educating children when a parent is not recognized as having any remedy as against the teacher? That is, for the wrongs that he may perpetrate against his child. And then in California today, the parent is, in the eye of the law, a criminal who ventures to send his own child to a school of his own choice and at his own expense without first going with his hat under his arm to a board of petty officials to beg their permission to do so. We have that problem today here in the United States. If you want to send your child to public school, you've got to have the permission or the authority of the local school board. And there's a good legal reason or good legal process behind it. See, when people get married in this country, they get a marriage license. And then when they have children, they get a birth certificate. So what the legal effect of this is this. The marriage license creates a three-party limited general partnership between the boy, the girl, and the state. So when the child is born, the state owns one-third of the child. And that's just where reality's at. Face up to the reality of it. Now, second thing is the boy and the girl then turn around and say to the state, their third partner, they say, well, we can't handle this kid, so we're going to give this child to the state. That's what registration's all about. You register your car. You give the MSO to the state, the state registers the car belongs to the state, and you pay rent called a registration fee every year. You get to buy the car, and you get to maintain it and keep it up, but you get to pay the rent to the state. Same thing's true with a child. You give the child to the state by the birth registration. Now the state owns the child. This reduces you to a babysitter of the state's child. So a social lady comes along and says, we don't like the way you're raising our child, so we're going to change babysitters. That's all that really boils down to. Americans are fully persuaded that they have to have birth certificates and marriage licenses, otherwise it wouldn't be a legal marriage. The state wouldn't recognize our marriage. I don't know what the hell Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob did with that state marriage license. I guess nobody recognized their marriages, and all their children turned out to be bastards. I don't have a state marriage license. I guess I'm living in sin. Now, if parents any longer have the least vestige of authority over the all-important matter of their own children's education, which is not wholly subordinated to the private interests and prejudices and petty spites of any and every little conclave of irresponsible upstarts who, by hook or by crook, can so manage an election or on election day as to have their names on the tickets of the winning party, we should feel under many obligations if somebody would inform us what that remaining parental authority is or where it is to be found. So you parents out there have been emasculated. You're eunuchs. Now, the Amish over here do have a little bit of an advantage over most other people. They have their own elementary schools, and they staff those with Amish teachers. At least by and large, they do. So when an Amish guy sends his kid to public school, it's public school, but it's a Amish public school, so they control that. Then the kid gets to be, you know, 14 years old in the 8th grade. They finish the grammar school, and they send these kids to higher education. They put them out in the field and teach them how to work, how to run a team of horses, how to do repair work on their combines and all of their ancient old farm machinery and equipment, and how to do things with their hands, and how to be productive, useful, working citizens in the community. In fact, that's what the Supreme Court said in Yoder versus Wisconsin. When they got all through analyzing the Amish, they said, you know, it looks like to us the Amish have nobody, no Amish people in the penitentiaries of Wisconsin. They don't send their children to high school. They don't send them to public education. They handle their own education in their own public schools, and they don't have any Amish people in prison. Looks like they're better able, more competent, more socially adjusted than the general population. Why do these people need to go to high school when they have succeeded so admirably by the 8th grade in teaching and training their children that they don't have any criminals? Think of that. The Supreme Court came back and said not a single Amish person was locked up in the penitentiaries of Wisconsin. Now, of course, we could create crimes. We could legislate and create crimes and lock all these Amish people up. And after all, that's the purpose of the law enforcement growth industry, isn't it? To go out there and enact laws like seatbelt laws. I mean, before you had a seatbelt law, you didn't have any seatbelt criminals. Today, you know, if you don't buckle your seatbelt, you're a criminal. You're breaking the law. We're gonna arrest you. We're gonna fine you. We're gonna do something to you. All right, hang on a minute. I got to give you a caveat here. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in the world worldwide in 75 countries on the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults, and we do that on compact disc. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events. And we do it 7 days a week. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Now, to order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. I might mention to you that all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. So let's say you like this series of programs and you said, I got to send this to my Uncle Louie. You can download this series of programs if you'll go to the website, georgegordon.org. I don't know how to do this. You got to get a computer geek here to do this, but you push on the right buttons. And then we have an archive section on there, and then you download these programs, and you can get them in 32 and 16-bit format. Depends on your computer. Radio stations take it in 32-bit, download it, and then they replay that, you know, in other countries and other places around the country. You know, there's local radio stations that carry this program, but I don't necessarily know who they are. They can download the program, and you can do the same thing. It doesn't cost you anything. Now, there's one last item here I need to share with you, and that is that the opinions and beliefs and the comments and the views and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this local radio station. So for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, you can go to the website georgegordon.org or call the law school direct 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to order that free general law CD package. I think you'll be glad you did. It didn't cost anything. Now we can tell you what we're all about. You can see what God, listen to this right-wing radical reactionary kook. Get it right from the horse's mouth. Now, Montgomery goes on to say here, he says, Is it not the almost unanimous cry on the part of parents throughout the length and breadth of the land that they can neither command the respect nor obedience of their children? And are not our police courts crowded and our county prisons and state penitentiaries being filled with beardless boys, many of whom have had comfortable homes and have grown up in the society of respectable parents, but never under the parents' control? But perhaps we shall be asked, why is it that neither politicians nor the parents of children have thus far done anything towards furnishing a remedy for all of these crying evils? Why isn't somebody doing something about this? We answer, the reasons are numerous, but the first and most important reason that we shall assign is called ignorance. Ignorance of the true and heaven or God-ordained relations between parent and child. Ignorance of the reciprocal duties which they respectively owe to each other. Yes, and ignorance, total ignorance, of the foregoing terrible facts so clearly revealed by the United States Census reports. Now let anyone who doubts the general ignorance of our people on this last subject test the matter. Why don't you go to someone and then the first 10 men that you meet concerning the facts shown by our published tables, show them these census reports. The truth is that the advocates of this New England system have been so long, so loud, and so persistent in their proclaiming to the world its supposed excellencies that 9/10 of the world have, without the least investigation, concluded to accept it for all that its most enthusiastic admirers represent it to be. Were it not for the widespread and almost total ignorance on the part of parents as regards the poisonous and deadly fruits which they and their children and society at large are daily reaping from this anti-parental system of education, it could not survive a single month in its present condition. Oh, how true it is that ignorance is the mother of vice. Now, another reason why no remedy has been applied to this fearful malady is a long-standing, deep-seated, and constantly fomented prejudice in favor of this evil public school system, which makes the politicians afraid to attack the monster, lest they hurt their popularity. And you can see that today. You know, to attack the NEA is to, well, the NEA votes the straight Democratic ticket. I mean, the teachers have been supporting the Democrats from day one. But it's political in nature. And if you want the support of the teachers of America, and you have to tell those teachers what they want to hear. And the same thing is true with blacks and every other minority in the country. You got to tell them what they want to hear. So society is fragmented politically. The solution to the public school system is just as simple and straightforward as it can be. And at the beginning of this chapter 9, Montgomery points to four authorities. Remember those four authorities? Kent, Bouvier, Blackstone, and Wayland. And he said the duty of parents is to educate their own children. That's why we have homeschool. That's why our Constitution is silent on this education thing. Now you got the federal government out here spending billions of dollars educating and directing, propagandizing is what they're doing, propagandizing your children. Now, if you don't like what you see coming out of your public school in your child, why don't you do something about it? Educate your own child. That's your duty. It's a wild new concept. Stop practicing the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. Jerk your kid out of public school. Educate him at home. Now, here in Missouri, we have to get leave of our state authorities. It's not the toughest thing in the world to do. All 50 states have a provision for statutory provision for educating children in homeschool. And you can educate yourself. And you don't have to be a mental giant to figure that out. But here in Missouri, for instance, you want to educate your kid. I don't have to notify anybody. I just start educating him here in public school. If and when the state officials figure out that we're educating them at home, they can demand that you bring the child in to have him tested to see if the kid, let's say the kid, you know, is 10 years old, and he should be in the, well, let's say the fifth grade, and then he should test at the fifth grade level. Now, as dumb as public school children are, you know, you don't have to be very bright. Homeschool children, you know, usually score way ahead of the public schools. And I know our daughter did. She was testing it by the time she was 10, 11, 12 years old. I think it was 12, about 12 years old. She was testing at the high school level. In fact, it was grade 12, 12th year, fourth or fifth month. So, you know, they told us over here at the Ludi School, they said, well, you don't need to bring this kid in anymore. This kid is already testing past graduation in high school, and she's in the seventh grade. So you don't need to bring her back. But up until they can show that they're pretty knowledgeable, they can make it bring her in once or twice a year and have her tested. And they did that a couple times. They had to bring her over there and they tested her and said, hey, this kid's pretty bright, pretty smart. Now, just to give you an idea as to how this homeschooling thing works, he's on a break in here, give you a little editorial comment. The educational level or the product that you're turning out here in homeschool will score at the 86th percentile on average. I'm not quite sure that I understand what percentile means, but 86th percentile. So I'm going to give you the numbers that I read here out of the books. And That is an 86%. They call it the 86th percentile. And then if they're educated in parochial school, say you send them down the street to the local Catholic or Baptist school, they'll score on average at about the 80th percentile. Not entirely clear why it is the parochial school isn't quite as good as homeschool, but those are the numbers. Then if you send them to public school, on average nationwide, they'll score at the 50th percentile. And then if you've got your child enrolled in an inner city public school, you know, in downtown Philadelphia, they'll score on average at the 28th percentile. Now look at this, you inner city people living in Detroit, Houston, Los Angeles, your kid is going to score at the 28th percentile while homeschool children score at the 86th percentile. Don't you think you can do better than that? And get this, the homeschooling parents are not trained as educators. They're truck drivers. Now it's true that there are some homeschool children that are being educated by professionals. You know, they may be school teachers, they may have teaching credentials and certificates, etc. But that's not the general rule. The general rule that these people are housewives that are educating their children at home, which is what mother is supposed to do. That's what God instructed you ladies to do, educate your children at home. I'll show you that when we get to these education statutes here from the Mosaic Law. All right, now meanwhile, back on the farm, Zach Montgomery points out here that we answer these reasons, and they're numerous, and he's pointing out here that another reason why no remedy has been applied to this fearful malady is a long-standing, deep-seated, and constantly fomented prejudice in favor of the public school system, which makes the politicians afraid to attack this monster lest they hurt their popularity. It's a monster. But the politicians can't do anything about it because they'd lose votes, and they're not going to do that. Now, there's still another difficulty, and that is a want of harmony among those who see and lament the terrible evils which this system is bringing on the country, and who are willing to make any and every sacrifice to avert those evils. One says, let us have the Bible in the public schools. Another says, no, I want no Bible in the public school. A third says, let us divide the school funds amongst all the different religious denominations in such a manner that each denomination shall as a body have control of a portion of those funds corresponding with the number of its members. While a fourth says, away with such silly nonsense, we have far too much ecclesiasticism in the public schools already. But is there not, we ask, a common ground whereupon every friend of educational reform can stand? And I contend that most undoubtedly there is. Let us recognize, just as the law of nature recognizes the right and the duty of all parents having the ability to educate their own children in their own way and by the use of their own funds. After all, it is not less the interest than the duty of parents when they can do so to pay the cost of their own children's education, not to allow the state to pay it for them. For be it remembered that the cost and care of property and properly feeding, clothing, and educating the child are but the price which nature demands of parents for the incomparable treasure of the child's love, honor, and obedience, and just in proportion to the extent to which parents neglect or refuse to pay this price, in precisely the same proportion do they forfeit their right to this inestimable boon. Let us suppose that the state should take upon itself to feed and clothe, as well as to educate the child. Does anyone doubt that a child thus fed, clothed, and educated at the public expense would grow up almost wholly destitute of parental affection? Well, hey, boys and girls, isn't that where we're at today? I mean, your children, you know, are called latchkey kids. You're off busy making a living. So the parental authority is relegated to the schools. The schools feed them the school lunch. They probably give them breakfast and lunch in school. They get all of their education from school. What do they get from mom and dad? A broken home, more than likely. Divorce. And who is so stupidly blind as not to see that the education of the child, after all, is the great nourisher of its affections? Respect, love, and veneration do not depend near so much on either the source or the character of the food which enters the stomach, or upon the source and character of that which is taken into the mind and into the heart. But in cases where parents have not sufficient worldly wealth to give their children a good elementary education, let the state aid them, just exactly as it should aid them, when necessary, with means to feed and clothe their children, rather than let them either starve or go naked. But for the same reason that the state would not feed the children of its more needy citizens upon the most dainty and costly delicacies, nor clothe them in the finest silks and satins, so neither should the state educate them in those higher or merely ornamental sciences not necessary for those avocations in which they are likely to engage during their lives. And when the state furnishes educational aid, let it do so always in harmony with the principles of parental guardianship over the child. And let the parent in such cases select the school. And let the state pay the teacher. Let this boon be extended to all who need state aid without regard to differences in politics or religion. Perhaps, though, we shall be told that so radical change in the public school system as that suggested would work the destruction of the system itself. And I say if that be so, then we would ask whether it is better for us to destroy this evil system or to let this evil system destroy us. Again, it may perhaps be objected that even if every parent in the land had the means and the privilege of educating his own children in his own way, still, there would always be found some parents in every community who would neglect this most sacred duty, and what ought to be done with such parents? Well, we answer, what ought to be done with those heartless parents who, having the means at hand, either of their own or such as have been furnished by the state to comfortably feed and clothe their children, would, nevertheless, deliberately leave them to die of starvation or perish with cold? In either case, such parents should be punished as criminals against the laws both of God and society. But so long as the state undertakes to force upon the children of any class of parents a system of education which they cannot accept without a violation of conscience and of nature's laws, it is nothing less than the most cruel tyranny on the part of the state to make such a system compulsory. Let every friend of educational reform unite in maintaining these plain, just, and most reasonable principles, and the day is not distant when, with heaven's blessing, we shall restore parental authority, reestablish family government, and teach the rising generation to love, honor, and obey not only their fathers and mothers, but also the laws both of God and their country. Boy, that's a wild concept, isn't it? Now, the anti-parental school system, dissected and analyzed, looks like this. Should we wish to ascertain the exact character and properties of the waters of our great Pacific Ocean, we would not undertake to analyze the whole ocean, for that would be an endless task. But we would take up at most a few ounces of this water, and after making a thorough analysis of it, we would analyze the results, and then we would announce those results as indicating the properties and character of the waters of the Pacific. Well, so it is if we would make a careful and reliable analysis of the essential principles and elements which go to make up what is known as the public school system. If we were to undertake to subject to an analytical test the whole system with its entire paraphernalia of teachers, pupils, parents, school directors, school teachers, school books, school funds, and school houses as they exist throughout the entire country, we should become amazed and bewildered at the magnitude of our undertaking and would probably abandon the enterprise in despair. So let us take from this very large mass of school material a small quantity of its essential elements, just enough to be handled with ease and examined with care, and we shall be the better able to see what is the character of the ingredients which go to make up the system. In order that you, good reader, may not accuse us of unfairness in our selection of this particular sample to be analyzed, we will allow you to choose your own material. Then cast your eyes around and among your friends and neighbors, the name for us, and we want you to name for us, two of the very best, purest, most intelligent, highly educated, and reliable men of your acquaintance. Let them be men of your own religion and belonging to the same political party as yourself. In a word, let them be two men to whom, in preference to all others in the world, you would be willing to entrust the guardianship of that beautiful young child of yours, should it please God to take you and your mother away and her mother away from her during her years of childhood. Now, these two friends of yours, whom we shall call A and B, we shall take it for granted are the very best material to be found in that great mass of voters who control by their votes the destinies and the shape and character of our public school system as it exists in your city today. Now, let us suppose these two model men and neighbors should someday come to your house and address you this way. Mr. C, we're informed that you are the father of a bright, beautiful, and intelligent little girl, now about 7 years old, just the proper age to begin her education. And we feel quite anxious that she should be properly educated, and to tell you the plain truth, we're afraid that if we leave the matter entirely with you, her education will be neglected. Now, as here's what we propose to do. We propose that we, your two best friends, together with yourself, shall all enter into a written contract, binding ourselves during your daughter's minority to contribute annually a certain percentage upon the assessed value of our property, which shall constitute a fund for the education of this, your little girl. But it must at the same time and in the same contract be stipulated that it shall at all times be in the power of a majority of us, the majority of us three, to select the teachers and the school books for your child. Should you, against the wishes and without the consent of a majority of us, take your child away and send her to some other school, you must agree to forfeit, should we choose to exact it, not exceeding $20 for the first offense and not less than $20 for each subsequent repetition thereof. You must also agree and bind yourself in advance not to withhold your assessment, even should you withdraw your child from the school of your selection, because we should, in that event, need the money for the education of other children. Now tell us, good reader. Listen to this. Tell us, good reader, could you ever consent, while living and in the possession of your reasoning faculties, to entrust such a power as this over your infant child, whether a girl or a boy, to any two men in existence? Would you sign a contract like that with your two best friends? And if the answer to that is no, why in the world would you entrust your children to nameless, faceless bureaucrats that aren't even elected to office? Who probably don't belong to your political party, certainly don't share your religious ideologies or beliefs, and you want to send your child off to a school to teach that child sex education and alternative lifestyles such as sodomy, whoredom, lesbianism in the public school system, and you call that education? Well, as Montgomery points out, I don't think most Americans have their reasoning faculties intact. Do you? Now, would you not spurn such a proposition as the above with indignant scorn, come from what source it might? We may here remark in passing that it surely could not better the matter should these supposed friends and neighbors, in consideration of this proposed outrageous betrayal of your parental trust, even offer to perpetrate a similar wrong against their own children by turning over to you, the insulted father, a corresponding share in their parental authority. This is that concept. It takes a village. It's that concept of communism. It's that concept of from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. Share and share alike. Now, these are concepts that come straight from communism. Now, again, you know, if you want to practice communism, I don't have any complaint about you practicing what you want to practice. I'm pretty happy with the system the way it is. I'm not complaining. I educated my children at home, homeschool. There's provisions made in our law, at least here in the United States, that we can do just about everything that we've always done in this country under our Constitution. You might want to tuck that one away in your heart. And yet, good reader, this miniature picture, which we have just drawn of the public school system, presents that system in its very best possible aspect, because we have represented you, the father, as still allowed to retain in your own hands one third of that parental jurisdiction and control which the God of heaven requires you to exercise over your child, while the other two thirds are to be entrusted to two of the very best men in the whole community. But under the public school system as it is by law established, instead of retaining in your own hands even so much as one third of your parental authority, you retain only an infinitesimal fraction thereof. Where there are, as in San Francisco, tens of thousands of voters, each father divides his parental authority into tens of thousands of equal fragments, retaining but one of those fragments for himself, whilst the great bulk of his authority, instead of being lodged, as in the case above supposed, in two of the very best men to be found in the city, is scattered abroad, broadcast among tens of thousands of people, good, bad, and indifferent. It is gobbled up and wielded by every rough and every rake who is allowed to vote. And this is what they call our great American free school system. I'm out of time. We'll have to take it up right there when we come back next time, tomorrow night. Remember, we're reading Zach Montgomery, The Origin of Public Schools, Poison Drops in the Federal Senate by Zach Montgomery. And we'll be back to take that up next time. Let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour and editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Website, that's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy, procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. All right, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.